Now, the general import of this parable, the parable of the rain cloud, is obvious. And there's no need for me, I think, to comment much on any of its specific details, as I was doing in the case of the previous two parables with which we've dealt so far. I want to spend the greater part of our time this evening dealing with some of the more general implications of the parable. First of all, the parable is a symbol, one of the symbols, of life and growth. It describes how rain falls from the cloud, and how, as a result, all the plants, all the shrubs grow. And they all grow, and this, as we shall see later on, is very important, they all grow in their own way. But if we recollect the previous parables with which we've dealt so far, we shall probably recollect that they also are symbols of life and of growth. That is to say, the parable of the burning house, with which we dealt the week before last, and the parable of the return journey, with which we dealt last week. Indeed, we can go so far as to say that the whole White Lotus Sutra itself, and not just the parables it contains, the whole White Lotus Sutra itself is a symbol of life and of growth. And this is why in the second lecture in this series I described it as the drama of cosmic enlightenment. Because, as we saw then, it depicts a universe, a realm of being, in which all individual beings whatsoever are moving forward, moving in the direction of enlightenment. It depicts a universe in which arahants are becoming bodhisattvas, and bodhisattvas are becoming Buddhas. It represents a sort of upward trend of the whole creation. And this state of affairs is reflected in individual parables. It's reflected in the parable of the burning house. You may remember that the children in the parable are enticed out of the burning house by their father, who promises them all sorts of toys, and that eventually they all ride in wonderful decorated bullock carts. In other words, in the parable, the children, that is to say sentient beings, are depicted as moving from a lower to a higher state of existence, depicted as moving from the conditioned to the unconditioned, from a state of suffering, at least potential suffering, to a state of everlasting bliss and peace and happiness. And it's the same with regard to the parable of the return journey. In the parable of the return journey, we see the poor man coming closer and closer and closer to the rich man, becoming more and more like him, and in the end being acknowledged as his son and inheriting his wealth. So in both cases, in both parables, there is growth. There is development, there is onward and upward movement. So a question therefore arises. The question being, what is it then that distinguishes tonight's parables as embodying symbols of life and growth? In what way do they differ from the previous parables that they are specifically described as symbols of life and growth, whereas the previous parables haven't been so described, at least not specifically. Now, the difference between them is a quite simple matter, because in tonight's parables, the symbols of life and growth which occur in both parables are what we may describe as vegetable symbols. That is to say, the whole process of spiritual development, of the higher evolution, is represented in terms of the growth, the unfolding, if you like, of a plant.